the very concept of objective truth is fading out of the world. Lies will pass into history. And this week's opening quote comes from George Orwell. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. When attempting to piece together the past from the scattered fragments that we have, the relics that are lying around the world, and the scattered fragments that we have in the history that we've got, it's very, very important to start with a completely blank slate and just start pulling at threads and let them take you where they lead you. That's the approach that I have always employed anyway. That's the approach that I've always found has worked best for me. I don't ever start anything with a foregone conclusion of where it's going to go or by wanting it to go anywhere. I don't start off trying to confirm opinions that I've got or theories that I may hold. I simply pull at the threads and see where the threads lead me. Sometimes I may form theories or opinions along the way and think, okay, that's a possibility, and I'll put that up there on the shelf to be considered. But I won't use that as a focus or use it as a point of reference to cloud my judgment on where the threads may lead me. I don't particularly want the threads to go in any particular direction because I don't have any stake in the outcome. There's no particular result that I want to be true. And this is the way I've always approached everything. I mean, a lot of people with whatever research they're doing, perhaps they're researching something like the Bible. Often they will go into that research wanting to prove the Bible to be true or wanting to prove the Bible to be false. It'll be one of the two. There are very few that just go in there to see where the threads will lead them. It's the same when someone is researching the roots of civilization or something like that. People will get a focal point saying, well, I believe it was these people who were the first, and they'll go and they'll look for stuff that reinforces that to see if they can prove their theory. Same when people are looking into the ET concept or whatever. A lot of people go in there trying to prove aliens are real or trying to disprove aliens are real. It's the same with the globe and flat earth debate as well. People go in there wanting to either prove the flat or prove the globe. You know, with most of these topics, people don't just pull at the threads and see where the threads lead them. They go in there with a foregone conclusion, and most of the time, whether they are prepared to admit it to themselves or not, they're wanting to see a particular outcome in what they're researching. And they don't see so many other things because they're simply not prepared to look. And this is very much the case also in regard to history, because people are simply not prepared to look outside the box that is given to them by academia. You know, I've always had this philosophy that belief is the enemy of knowledge, and I'm very careful of what I choose to believe because the rabbit hole that we're investigating goes so deep and there are so many red herrings along the way that you just never know where you're going to be led. So it's very, very important to keep an open mind through the entire process and not want for any particular outcome to be true in what you're researching. Because if you do, you may well miss other little clues along the way. As I said, the rabbit hole goes very, very deep. Now, I think it's important to never approach these sort of issues with a foregone conclusion of what you're going to find and be going about looking for things to reinforce that view. I always think it's best to just let the story unfold in front of you and see where it leads you. And letting the story unfold before me was kind of what led to the last broadcast that I put out, and I did get quite a mixed result from that broadcast. I got a lot of people praising it, and I got a lot of people criticizing it, and it was very interesting to watch the responses from it, and it was quite expected that I would get those responses from it as well. And again, it was a pretty vague outline that I gave in that show, because I was just kind of throwing the pieces on the table and seeing where they felt to get people's opinion of them. But since that broadcast, I've had so much more information come in, and it's really interesting watching how history unfolds and just how much we have been lied to. Something that I did receive from some of the comments on the last broadcast was criticism for questioning the official written version of history. There were suggestions that by questioning the official version of history, I may be discrediting myself or the information that I'm presenting to people in other shows that I've done. But really, the official version of history is very, very questionable, ladies and gentlemen. The timeline is all wrong. It really is. And having recently discovered the work of Anatoly Fomenko and the new chronology that he has presented, it really does make a lot of sense. And you've got to understand that there were other people that also presented this chronology. Newton presented this chronology, and at least two or three other historians along the way presented this type of chronology and suggested our history was out by at least 500 to 1,000 years. And that's irrespective of what you think of Newton's other work or what you think of these other scholars' other work. It's just a simple fact that all of these three random scholars who had nothing really to do with each other all came up with the same kind of timeline. They came up with the same amount of years that have been changed, the same dates for the years that have been changed. So it really does lead a lot of credibility to this concept. And perhaps let me correct that, not necessarily years that have been changed, but at least years that were out in the calendar. They all recommended that everything before about 1300 should be scrapped for about 500 years. All of that history should be deleted. And when I say deleted, I don't mean you delete the events, you just bring them forward in time. A lot of the stuff that we're told happened 500 or 600 years before those dates actually didn't. It happened contemporaneously with other events. It's just that they pushed many of them back in time and extended the timeline by 500 to 1,000 years in some places, which really doesn't need to be there because that time doesn't exist. And I'm sorry if I just can't remember their names offhand. I've had a lot of information come in the last couple of weeks and got a lot rattling around in my head, but it's mentioned in Anatoly Fomenko's book. And then having Fomenko's work, again, this lends even more credibility to it, because once you read Fomenko's work, it's really backed up by so much fact that it's virtually impossible to dispute. He's got so much evidence to back up what he's saying, far more than what we're presented with in the current academic version of history. Fomenko's timeline is also very much supported by the myriad of artifacts that are lying all over the world, which can't really be explained very well by modern academic history. And you've got to look at where that current academic version of history also came from, which was through Scaliger and a bunch of other people. It was virtually written by two or three people who kind of made it up and put out their opinion of what they thought it would be. And it worked well for the church, and so the church spread it everywhere, and they all worked for the church anyway. They were all working for the Jesuits when they compiled this history, and so, of course, it is questionable. Now, on the last show, I was alluding to the lost civilization that we've all been searching for so many years. You know, this has been disputed by so many academics that this civilization existed. So many of them will say that it didn't. But you've got many, many independent researchers, including myself, who say that it did, because the evidence for it is frankly everywhere. And the point is that a lot of the evidence that's lying all over the world can't really be explained by the current academic timeline, but it can be explained if you factor in a lost civilization. The problem is that they're just simply not prepared to do that, because if there is, and they've got all this period of history they can't explain because they're sticking to this Roman timeline. And they say, well, if civilization built up from Rome and there was a civilization that existed before that, then there's a gap and we can't explain that gap. So therefore this civilization couldn't have been there. And they automatically assume that anything that doesn't fit within their Roman Scaligerian version of history must automatically be wrong. And so they're not prepared to look. And it's a very counterproductive way of looking at things, simply because they've got this box that they're forced to fit everything into. And if it doesn't fit within that box, then it must be false. And that's the predisposition of most modern academics in regard to history. It has to fit with the currently accepted timeline, or it's to be disregarded and put on the shelf as a great mystery, never to be looked at again. But as I said, if you factor in the reality that there was a lost civilization that actually existed up to quite recently and that the timeline is wrong, all of the artifacts fall into place. And if you really look at it on a wider picture, the development of technology that we've seen right up to this 5G grid we're seeing rolled out now also falls into place. How it's all been able to be achieved so quickly. And I went through a lot of that last week on the radio show. But if you want to know more about this, I do urge you to get hold of A.T. Fomenko's book, History, Science, or Fiction. It's a series of 6 or 7 books, and I do urge you to look at that. It really is a very thorough and very comprehensive revision of the current chronology, And again, if you would like a very in-depth report on just how much evidence there is supporting the existence of a lost civilization lying around the world, I do suggest that you go to a YouTube channel called New Earth and watch a series called When the Survivors of Atlantis Wake Up. The lady who put that series together, Sylvia Ivanova, has really done a fantastic job of compiling an awful lot of evidence to indicate that our history has changed, to show you where most of these relics are of these lost civilizations, and to show you quite a good deal of evidence which very much supports the suggestion that this civilization was still in full bloom up till quite recently. And this is also backed up by my research and by the research of many other people. It's just that she has compiled a very, very comprehensive series here in an 18-part video series, and I do recommend that you go and watch that. But looking at it a little bit deeper, you know, understanding the concept of this Atlantean culture and considering the possibility that it was very likely a worldwide culture, that the land that supposedly sank may not necessarily have been Atlantis, but may have been a greater landmass, and that what we refer to as Atlantis was, as I said, simply a culture of these people. It brings other possibilities into question, especially when one considers the possibility of the ancient landmass referred to as Lemuria or Mu, the great land that was apparently at some stage in the Southern Ocean, and you'll find that this is actually supported by many legends as well. And it's very likely that this was the land that sank, and this was the culture that brought what we know as the Atlantean culture to the world. Now, I'm just speculating with that, but it's very likely that that is what happened. And it's very likely that this culture, this ancient land of Lemuria, encompassed the lands of Australia right across through to Madagascar and possibly even joined Africa, or perhaps it stopped at Madagascar and just encompassed Australia and New Zealand over to that point. But it's very likely that it was there, and it was these people who went out and spread their culture around the rest of the world. And there may be many people that will want to dispute that claim because of the claim by modern academia that life came out of Africa. This is the currently promoted hypothesis, and they make this claim because the more diversity that can be found in genome types, the older the race. Well, this is the claim that is made anyway. And African Negroes have, I believe, 6 different genome types. But what they fail to tell you in that claim is that the Australian Aboriginal actually has 32 different genome types. So if the more diversity of genome indicates the older the race, then the Australian Aboriginal would appear to be at least 6 times older than the African Negro. So taking that into account, it would be reasonable to assume that were an ancient culture to exist, these people would perhaps have been part of that culture. And this is a culture that predates known history, but may not exactly have existed in what we would perceive to be ancient antiquity. Although maybe it did, but it's very likely that it didn't disappear in ancient antiquity and was then replaced by the Roman Empire. It's very likely that this culture went from ancient antiquity up until around about 1,000 years ago, where it fell into decline for some reason. Something happened, and then it finally fell into complete decay and got wiped out from existence around about 200 or 300 years ago. And the reason I'm putting this out there and claiming this as a possibility is simply because this is the hypothesis that all the evidence supports. And it's been very difficult to piece all of this together up until this point because we've been working with the timeline that we've been given by academia, assuming this to be at least vaguely correct. But with the introduction of Fomenko's new chronology, suddenly all the pieces of the puzzle fit together. Well, a great deal of them certainly do anyway, but the point is that they all lead towards the existence, they all lend credibility and go a long way to verify the existence of an ancient worldwide culture. And as I said on the show last week, this is the culture that is referred to in South American legends, Viracocha, Quetzalcoatl, and these great teachers that came. And it's also very likely that the land that they originally came from disappeared somehow, and the remnants of this culture went out and settled around the rest of the world. But however it happened, many of the ancient cultures that we were left with, such as the Aboriginal culture that we found in Australia when the British arrived, were populated by both black skin and white skin people. And this is also supported by the very little-known fact that when the British came here to colonise Australia, there were actually white-skinned tribes, white-skinned Aboriginal tribes living here with the dark-skinned Aboriginal people. And this can be confirmed in the notes of George Augustus Robinson, who was a man who was hired as a go-between between the Aborigine people and the Crown on Swan Island off Tasmania. And this tribe is actually known as the Tasmanian Whites of Swan Island. And as I said, very, very few people know that, but there were white people in amongst these tribes. And the very interesting thing about these tribes, all of the Aboriginal tribes, in fact, in Australia, was the language that they were speaking. Because really when you're trying to trace the roots of civilization, something that many people overlook is the linguistic comparisons and the linguistic similarities between many of these races and search for the root race or the root language of these races. Because if there is a root language that can be traced to all continents, then we do find the root language of this lost culture, this lost civilization. And if we do that, then we do identify the fact that it was a worldwide civilization simply because a worldwide language would clearly confirm a worldwide culture. And not only that, but were we to find a worldwide root language, we would also identify the language that existed before the confusion of the tongues. And that's a very significant thing, folks, because were such a language ever to be found, then that blows the entire official version of history clean out of the water. Because, as I said, a root language, a worldwide root language, identifies clearly a worldwide culture that existed on this earth. Okay, so enter the research of a little old Hungarian man who came to Australia just after World War II. He was a builder, but also an outstanding linguist. It was a hobby of his, and he spent most of his life since arriving in Australia after World War II researching history, in particular the Australian Aboriginal languages. And what he used to do was he used to go to the Mitchell Library in Sydney, into the special reading room archive collection, and usually only academics can get access to these types of books, but he was granted access in the 1960s by the head of Sydney University simply because the head of university was very impressed by his remarkable linguistic skills and figured he was safe and he knew what he was doing, so he let him in there to study. And so that's how he used to spend his time, mainly sitting in the Mitchell Library, reading through very old books and journals from the very early days of Australian colonisation and generally any other rare old books from around the world that he could get his hands on. Now, the man I'm referring to is a Hungarian man by the name of Attila Flenk. And I'm not sure if I should mention his name because I may get in trouble for doing so, but hey, I'm going to do it anyway. Because he was quite well known in some circles, he actually did speak before a parliamentary meeting once to present his research. This was in the early 70s. There was a man called Sir Charles Wentworth actually supported his work and got him to speak at a parliamentary congress with international delegations present. And after he presented his work, the Chinese delegation booed and got up and left the conference. And you won't find any research of this guy on the internet because he never got to publish his work. His work has come to me by way of a friend of his. And it's not actually his work, it's simply notes that this person took of the work that this man was doing. All his work does still exist, but we're not sure whether it will ever be released to the public because of the delicate nature of the work and also because of who is in possession of the work. But what this man did was he worked out with academic proof that right up until the English arrived, the original tribes of Australia were all speaking different dialects of the original Magyar root language. And he focused extensively on Tasmanian and Sydney languages, but he had examples of this proof from all over the country. Now, Magyar is the original root language of Hungarian, and it's kind of a mysterious language. We're told it comes out of the Urals, but it's all ridiculous. The story we're told about where it comes from just doesn't make sense. So it's kind of a mystery language. And by removing the true source of where that language developed from the Hungarian people, they've kind of caused the Hungarian people to lose their identity as well. And quite notably, the time that it was put forth that the Hungarian language was rooted in Finnish and Ural language was the same time they annexed Australia. Just a coincidence, of course. But he clearly identified the language of the original people of Australia as having its roots in Magyar. So, of course, Magyar could not have had Finnish and Ural roots, otherwise it wouldn't be found in Australia, and obviously has to come from a wider source. And he realised this because he was actually able to translate many of the old Aboriginal words into Hungarian phrases, and he was also able to communicate with many of the older Aboriginal tribes because of the root language they were using was basically the same as the Hungarian root language, which is Magyar. So the question has to be asked, how could it be that the Australian Aboriginal was speaking the same basic root language as white Hungarians from Europe? And upon further research, it would also appear that he confirmed that this was also the same root language that was being spoken by tribes in the Incas, the Ecuadorians, the Polynesians, and the Melanesians as well. Basically everywhere that the European invaders went and stole their lands and claimed as New World discoveries, this language was being spoken.
And it goes even further. Apparently, according to Flink, when Christopher Columbus discovered the Americas, and which is kind of another grey area to get into because we know that Columbus didn't discover America, and it may not have even been Columbus who did the trip, but whoever it was who did that journey, somewhere during that incident, six Incas were taken from South America and were brought back to the Pope in Rome.
And when the Pope heard the Incas speaking Magyar, he ordered the Spanish to go and wipe out the entire Inca race, around 40 to 50 million of them. And I can't bring you any more on that particular information at the moment because I'm still a little vague on that bit, but I will find out more about the Inca Ecuadorian Central American connection and I'll get back to you on a later show. As I said, folks, I'm just pulling at threads here and seeing where they go, but I will get some more information on that and get back to you on it.
But it really does make sense that that is why the Spanish went in and wiped out the Incas. You see, it wasn't about the Inca gold. That was just a bonus on the side, but the gold was just a cover story. They didn't go in there to steal the gold. They went in there to wipe out the population because they didn't want them speaking that language. And this would also explain why the remnants of the South American culture that were left after the Inca invasion were forbidden to speak their own language. It also explains why the East India Trading Company wiped out so many shamanistic tribes all around the world. It all begins to make sense when you start thinking that it was the language that they were looking for, because they needed to wipe out all trace of this language, because any trace of this language would have proven that there was a worldwide culture that they were destroying. But it would appear, according to Flink's work, that this was the root language that was spoken in all of these places, and so the Jesuit forces went out and made a very, very concerted effort to clear the world of this root language and to genocide all the people who spoke it. They genocided the Incas, they genocided all the Polynesian people, they certainly genocided the Native Americans, and then the same thing was done to the tribes in Australia, which they wiped out in a similar manner to the way they wiped out the American Indians, mainly by giving them blankets with smallpox on them. What they actually did was send in Indian slaves that they'd kidnapped for shore to the Australian people, knowing the Australians would welcome them as brothers. But before they sent them ashore, they got long sticks with cotton on the end and smeared them with smallpox that they kept in a jar so they could infect the Australian tribes with smallpox and help wipe them out that way. And this sort of thing is simply not recorded in Australian history at all. We can find it in American history. It's quite a well-known event, but it's not recorded in Australian history at all. And instances of this are apparently recounted by many of the early explorers in the journals that Flink was looking through in the Mitchell Library. It's also noted that the British explorers sent people in there to communicate to the tribes to find out which tribes could speak Magyar, and then they subsequently went in and wiped all of those tribes out. Once the tribes found out this was happening, they all fled inland. And that's interesting in itself, but the story goes even deeper than that when you start looking into some of the translations that were pointed out by the work of Attila Flink. Because as I said, he clearly identified the root language of all the Australian tribes as being based in Magyar. And by doing that, he was also able to gain a much clearer understanding of what actually happened to the original people, because much of the story was told in their language, in the names that they were given, simply due to mistranslations. And so it's very interesting research to look at, and actually forms a huge piece of the puzzle that we've all been searching for. Incidentally, he was very heavily ridiculed at the time for even claiming that there was a connection between languages, between Hungarians and Australian Aboriginals. Apparently there was an article, the comical cartoon that was published in a local paper, of an Aboriginal dressed up as a Hungarian and the caption saying, "Hey, I'm a Hungarian." And that was after he'd done his presentation to the Parliamentary Congress at the request of Sir Charles Wentworth. So a very concerted and deliberate effort was undertaken to discredit this research when it was released and to hush him up and make sure it never got to the public. Apparently he was approached and told not to continue his research by a very irate Catholic priest in the late 60s when he was working on a Catholic church. And there was one stage when all of his work was actually stolen by ASIO, and he came home one day 2 weeks later to find two men sitting in his house with all of his work stacked up on the table, quietly telling him to not make too much noise about what he was researching. And again, folks, I've still got a lot of information to collect on this. I'm just sharing with you what I've got so far because I think it's pretty interesting and I think it's pretty relevant. And again, you might ask, what would be the point of covering all this up? Why would they try to hide it? Why wouldn't they want to find something like a root language? And the reason they would not be wanting to find a root language, folks, is because the discovery of a root language would, as I said, blow the entire official version of history out of the water. And not only that, but it would indicate that it wasn't God that confused the languages. It was actually the Jesuits. And what sort of an impact do you think that information would have on some people's belief systems? But I think we've reached break time here, ladies and gentlemen, so I'll leave it there for now. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company. And I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. Don't go away because there's plenty more to come. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, so it's been very interesting and quite synchronistic coming across this research of Attila Flink and the connections that he made and the stories that he found in the journals of the explorers in Australia. The stories of the original people being smeared with smallpox, the stories of how the British would send originally Magyar language speakers ashore to speak with tribes all around the coast of Australia. Whenever the tribes they would speak to would understand the language, the Crown would then wipe them out. It's all very, very interesting stories. It all makes a lot of sense. And of course, the final nail in the language coffin in Australia was when the Crown carried out the stolen generation operation, where children were actually separated from their parents and fostered with white families and forced to speak English and not their traditional tribal languages. You know, looking at things this way and seeing a different motivation in the actions of the Crown and how it was really all about destroying all trace of any connection to the past, it really does begin to make a lot of sense when you start putting things in this context and considering this as being a possibility. And again, it's just pulling at the threads, ladies and gentlemen, because when you start pulling at these threads, well, the language seems to be the common denominator that connects all of the genocides that were happening to all of the different cultures all around the world at the hands of the European invaders. And it's quite interesting, really, because the sheer pompous, arrogant attitude of some of the British invaders at the time when they were invading Australia really did lead to their downfall when you look at the language, because most of the Australian original languages were translated by a man called Joseph Milligan, and his arrogance and his pompous attitude actually led to the real story being hidden within the translations that he made. And then, perchance, the actions of an immigrant builder from Hungary who happened to be a linguist as a hobby, getting access to these translations. I mean, it's pretty random that this would happen. And that the man who gets access to the translations, that his language would have its roots in the same root language of the Australian Aboriginal people and give him the ability to be able to apply Magyar translations to these names and actually come up with the real story. It's pretty random that this could happen, folks. But the real story is there in the translations by Joseph Milligan. And it's just because of the way the translations were done. Because what Milligan would do, he would get an Aboriginal person there and he would simply point at something, and whatever the Aboriginal person said, he would write that down as the translation. And by way of example, there was one occasion where he pointed at a woman's breast. And the reply that came to him was paragana. And so he wrote down paragana as being the meaning of a woman's breast. And then he went over to a man and he pointed at a man's chest and he said paragana. But the man replied pagamaniera. And so he wrote down, okay, pagamaniera, that means a man's chest. But really when you apply Magyar translations to the words, it means something completely different. When he went over and pointed at the woman's breast, when the man had said paragana to him, what he had said was, we would prefer the hips. And when he walked over to the man and said paragana at the man said to him, pagamaniera, which did not mean a man's breast, but actually meant, if you would prefer my hips, then you are despicable and beneath my dignity. And that is just an example of how bad the translations were that Milligan was making. And there are many, many other examples of this. There was quite a famous Aborigine man who was taken to England and paraded before the crown, taken and shown to the world, whose name is Bennelong. Most people may be familiar with this character. Anyone who's familiar with Australian history should know the name Bennelong. There's a very good possibility that people in England would be aware of the story of Bennelong as well. His name Bennelong that was given to him was because when they asked him his name, he just said Bennelong, and he just kept saying Bennelong. But Bennelong actually comes from the Aboriginal word Bianalong, which when translated into Magyar means I am kidnapped. And that's what he was saying when they'd take him somewhere and they'd say, who is he? He'd just say, I'm kidnapped. I'm a kidnapped man. And so they gave him the name Bennelong. There's another woman, a famous woman in Tasmania, who was given the name Triganini. Triganini is actually a composite word. It's a combination of English and Magyar because of the word true, which is an English word. And she was given that name, Triganini, because she kept saying Triganini, Triganini. When they took her to the courtroom, she kept saying Triganini. But what she was actually saying when you put the Magyar translation to it is, tell the truth what happened to my brothers. Because what had happened when the Aborigine people had arrived on Swan Island, the British had cut their hands and feet off as they were leaving the boats and left them to bleed out and die on the shore. And as it would appear through Flink's research that the Aborigine people of Tasmania had strong Magyar roots in their language, it also becomes quite clear why the Tasmanian Aborigine tribes were genocided so completely. Another very interesting story is a story that comes from handwritten notes where there had been white whalers who had been raping Aborigine women in Tasmania. And the chief of the tribe called these whalers Magara Rage. This is another mistranslation, as where Magara was translated as meaning stop and Rage as meaning white man. But what Magara Rage means when translated correctly is Magyar devil spirit. And this is very, very significant, folks, because it shows that the Tasmanian Aboriginals already had a reference to white men as Magyar before the British arrived. It's also suggested that when Captain Cook arrived in Hawaii, the reason the Hawaiians were friendly to him at first was because they thought he was related to a Magyar king of the past from Lele in Indonesia. Lele is now an underwater ruin that can be seen off the coast of Indonesia sometimes. And they literally thought when he arrived that he was a god or at least royalty, and so Cook had no option but to go along with it. But when he left, bad weather and rough seas forced him back to Hawaii, forced him back onto the island. And that was when the Hawaiians realized that he wasn't a Magyar, that he was actually an imposter, because the Hawaiians had always known that the Magyar, or Magi as they called them, were master sailors and boatsmen and knew how to sail the seas in any weather. And they also knew that the Magyars used star maps to navigate the world and knew the lands by the star constellations that were above them. Cook obviously couldn't do this. He couldn't navigate by star maps, and he couldn't control his vessel in rough seas. And so the Hawaiians figured out that he wasn't a Magyar king, and so they killed him. Now, on the show last week, I was making reference to the point that there was very likely a worldwide religion that existed before the reformation of our history, before the world was turned into what it is now. That it was very likely a worldwide religion whereby both Islam and Christianity complemented each other. Whether this was simply both religions working in harmony with each other, or whether it was simply a pagan religion that developed into Christianity and Islam, this is up for debate. Anyone can go down that rabbit hole and do the research they want. That's not what I'm here to discuss. But the fact that there was a worldwide religion and that it was known throughout the world very significantly is also revealed through the research that was done by Attila Flink, because one of the other translations that he found, one of the translations that was done by Milligan, was when Milligan asked for the translation for the crucifix that he was wearing. Milligan was wearing a crucifix around his neck that depicted Christ on the cross, and he pointed at it and he wrote down the word that he was given, which was Urupuni. So he wrote down Urupuni for cross. But when translated into Magyar, the word Urupuni means the Lord God for your crime. Now, how on earth would an Aborigine tribesman from Tasmania would be aware of the reference in the Christian faith to the man on the cross being the Lord God for your crime if he was not already aware of the Christian faith, because he had encountered it before, because there was a worldwide culture and a worldwide faith accompanied by a worldwide common root language that once existed on this earth not too long ago. And he also had enough memory to know that the white people were Magyar. Now, you look at what they've done to destroy regional dialects in all of our countries. You go to Italy, look at all the regional dialects that have been destroyed in Italy. And not just Italy, but that's a good example. I mean, they do it through France, they've done it in the Netherlands, they do it everywhere. Every country you can think of, they bring in a national dialect and they start saying, oh, these little regional dialects are the common folk. You don't want to speak in the common tongue. You want to speak in the new tongue, the national language, so that you're up and smart with everybody else. What they do is they remove your connection to source, they remove your connection to the old ways and to the old customs, and they remove your connection to yourself. Now, when you really look at the significance of a worldwide language and you look at the English language, which is being superimposed over everybody, English is a very disconnecting language. There's no earth in English. There's no way to connect yourself to spirit when you're speaking the English language. But when you look at some of the old tribal languages, these languages connect you to the earth. They connect you to spirit. They connect you to the land that you live on. For example, as was pointed out to me by a friend the other day, the friend who brought me this information, when you're speaking English, you look at the word tree. There's nothing in that word to describe to you what a tree is. There's no feeling of a tree in there. You can't just say tree to someone, they'll know what you're talking about. You have to explain to them what the word means, and they have to figure out that that is the meaning of the word. But if you look at tribal languages, they describe the things that they're talking about. They connect you to the spirit of the things they're talking about. And it is very much suspected that were we able to reconnect to a root language that connects us to the earth, we would unlock a lot of powers within ourselves. You know, it's said that by singing certain words in Sanskrit, you can change the color of a candle flame. And it's even been postulated by some that English is, in fact, a phonetic reversal of the Hebrew language. So when you really start getting into these languages, you start looking at the roots of Hebrew, where that goes back to as well. I mean, this is a very, very deep rabbit hole to go down, and nothing that I can bring you on one radio show. There's so much information that I've had coming in the last few weeks. Really, it has been phenomenal. And trying to piece it all together to bring it to you is a bit of a mammoth task, but I've got so much to share about this in the next few months once I do put it all together. You're just going to have to bear with me on that, but it's very, very significant finding this work of Attila Flink and finding this language connection, because like I said earlier, folks, what it indicates is that God did not confuse the languages. The Jesuits confused the languages when they superimposed this current version of Christianity over the world. because it would appear that there was a prior version of Christianity that existed that was very, very peaceful. And people might say, well, look, Christianity is peaceful now, but hey, look at the world, folks. We're having a lot of wars on account of religion at the moment, and it would appear that all of these wars are completely unnecessary. All of these wars have been contrived by government, and a lot of these wars exist, and all of this conflict exists because we've all been removed from our roots. Every single people have been removed from their roots. Everybody. You know, I got a lot of flack last week for suggesting that a lot of this culture that we've got, this ancient culture, came from white races, and that the white races shouldn't really be held responsible for what these European invaders done, because ultimately, folks, it wasn't races, it was the psychopaths that control the races. And I still agree with that. And when you look at this research, it goes a long way to confirming that there was this ancient culture, that it was a white culture, that it went out and it migrated to all these other places, and that it was a Magyar culture. And you see that how there were white tribes living here in Australia. There were white tribes living with the Australian original people, and everyone was getting along fine. The whole world appears to have been getting along fine until something happened that infected the minds of a group of people, possibly those that were living around the region of Tartaria. Something happened. There was a war. Something happened. Somebody came. Something happened to shift our consciousness, to shift the entire world consciousness. And it started at that point, and then it's gone out and infected the rest of the world. But what we need to do is put down all this racial division and all this religious division and all the division that's been pushed on us, and realize that something has happened from outside that has changed what we were into what we are now. And the only way we're going to get back there is if we put all of our differences down and realize that we've all been played, and realize what's really happened here, how different our history is, and how much we need to reconnect to our roots and reconnect to what we really are. We're not going to be able to do this unless we put all of our stuff down, because there's a far, far bigger picture here than what most people are looking at. You know, we have been played on so many levels that it's almost impossible for people to see the big picture. That's why you can't be judgmental of people. You can't be out there pushing your belief systems on people. It's time for us to put it all down and walk to freedom, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for us to realize the truth. All humans on this earth are all family. We all have a common ancestor. We are all ultimately each other's kin. And it's time for us to unite as one kin, as one human family. You know, over the last 10 years since I began this radio show, myself and many others have presented an abundant amount of evidence to the world to expose the corruption of our governments, expose the corruption of this system that we're forced to endure in this human experience. And it's been done in an effort to find the truth and to help inspire people to stand up for themselves and step away from a system that they ultimately do not need. And we don't need this government system. This government system creates all of the problems that we face as a human species. It really does. And it's because, as I said last week, there are two species here. There are humans and there are those who look like humans, but they are psychopaths and they do not have human qualities, and they use all of our human qualities against ourselves. And we've got to put it all down. We've got to realize how we've been played and realize the significance of how big the lie is that encompasses us, how big the lie is in stealing someone's history, what this does to a species. How when you remove the roots of people, you remove their knowledge of who and what they are. You know, even the whole concept that the ancient race that existed was a Magyar race that spoke a Magyar language, and you look at the root of the word Magyar being in Magi, the whole concept of the magician, the whole concept of the powers that we had when we were connected to the earth. When you look at some of the ancient cultures and some of the ancient structures and some of the things that we did, and no, I don't believe that these things were built by alien races. I don't believe that they were built by the gods. I would suggest that we built a lot of this stuff. I would suggest that we were far more connected to this earth than what we are now, because we knew who we were. We knew what our relationship to this world was. We knew what our relationship to each other was. But something happened to interfere with that connection. And really, when you look at the new history that's been presented by Fomenko, go and look at some of the monuments that are lying all around the world. And again, I recommend that series by Sylvia Vanova, When the Survivors of Atlantis Wake Up. And again, folks, it doesn't matter whether you disagree with her New Age concepts or you disagree with the fact that she drinks ayahuasca or whatever. Forget all of that stuff. Put it all aside. It doesn't matter what your belief system is. Look at it from a historical perspective and look at the evidence, because it's there. And I've gone out and I've seen most of it for myself, so I can verify what she's put in that video is all there. You know, history may seem like an insignificant thing to people. Whatever happened in the past is in the past and it doesn't matter, but it does matter. It is extremely significant, and I urge people to get involved and to find out about the past and to find out what happened and to consider what we could achieve if everybody woke up to what the reality of this situation is. You know, if everybody were to realize how different our history really is and that we were living in a peaceful culture not too long ago, it would change everything. And for those people who ridicule that statement, how could you say that we lived in a world without war? Well, what you're looking at are history books that have been given to you by the people who control things now, and you have no way of verifying any of them. Because when you go and look around the world, there's nothing to verify the modern Scaligerian version of history, the modern academic version of history that we're all taught. There's actually nothing to confirm that any of it's true. Sure, we've got monuments lying all around the place, but there's no way to date them effectively. Carbon dating is completely ineffective simply because of the way they do it and the reference points that they choose to use to begin with, which can no way be confirmed. So there's really no way for us to confirm the age of anything that we're told. All we know is what we're told. But if you go out and you look around the world, as I keep saying, the evidence tells a completely different story. And the discovery of this work by Attila Flink, again, opens up an entire new perspective of what really happened. And I know it might be very confrontational for people to even consider some of the stuff that I've shared with you today. It may be very confrontational for Christians to consider this, the thought that perhaps Genesis 17:11 is wrong, the concept that perhaps it wasn't God who confused the language, that perhaps it was the Jesuits. But like I said, folks, I'm just pulling at threads and seeing where they lead. And if it is possible that there was a version of Christianity that existed before the Jesuits got hold of it, and that Christianity and Islam were living in a peaceful situation together with no war, isn't that something worth considering? Personally, I think it is. You know, and even when you look at some of the original Christian ceremonies, some of the original Islamic ceremonies, these all involved incense and smoke and all of this sort of stuff. You look at some of the shamanistic ceremonies, they all involve incense and smoke as well. None of them really involve blood sacrifice, so you've got to wonder where that came from, how that was ever introduced into the Christian faith, and what sort of a god would be asking for a blood sacrifice. Where did that come from? I could point at another religion that has gone so far unmentioned on all of the shows that I've been talking about history, but I think you know the religion that I'm pointing at. But I want to sort of do that without really pointing the finger at anybody. I just want to let the cards fall where they may, and I don't wish to suggest that anybody might be the problem. I just want to put all the evidence out there and pull at the threads and encourage other people to pull at the threads as well and see where they lead. But there is another faith that does involve itself in blood sacrifice quite often, and it would appear that that faith has superimposed itself over the other two faiths and caused these other two faiths to war with each other. Again, divide and conquer is the motto. Get the species to kill each other, get the races to kill each other, get the faiths to kill each other. And this is what has been done to us on so many levels, and it's what's been done to us now through this political system, through this whole intermingling of cultures that's happened as well. You know, multiculturalism isn't about sharing cultures with each other. It's about homogenizing the human race and creating sectarian sections within cities that can be played off against each other, which is what's been done. And we've got to put all of this stuff down and realize just how big this deception is and how much we've been played, ladies and gentlemen. You know, there's so much information that's coming out now. There's so many people that have been looking into ancient history for so long now. So many people have exposed the enormous amount of ruins that are lying all over the world. So there should be no doubt in anybody's mind that there was this ancient culture that was there. I mean, it can't be just written off anymore. You can't have mainstream academics just saying, well, the lost civilization theory, it doesn't hold any water. There are literally ruins everywhere, dating far, far back than what anybody would ever believe. And that's the thing with even what I'm saying with the timeline being changed and bringing things a lot closer to the present. I'm not saying that these things didn't exist in ancient antiquity. All I'm suggesting is that they weren't destroyed in ancient antiquity. I mean, sure, there's probably some cultures that were. I mean, the pyramids look pretty old. The Sphinx looks pretty old. There's certainly a lot of water erosion on that. Perhaps that culture fell into decline way back in the beginning of when things started falling into decline. But other cultures, such as the South American cultures and the ruins around Rome and Greece, these don't look that old. And there's every indication that whatever the civilization that was here, that began in ancient antiquity, actually existed up until quite recently, and then there was a concerted effort to wipe this civilization out worldwide, and not only wipe out the civilization, but wipe out all trace of any connection to it by making sure they wiped out any connection to the languages as well. And again, when you start looking at some of the things the East India Trading Company did when they went out and they destroyed shamanistic cultures all around the world, when the pirates went out and they raped, pillaged, and plundered everywhere, we always assumed that this was just about wiping out their shamanistic traditions, and it's a very indication that they were doing that. But what about factoring in the reality that they were probably searching for the language as well? Because were the language to remain, that would reveal the common connection that all of these cultures once had. And that's something really worth thinking about, folks, because if that's true, then that is something that is very, very significant. And what can I say, folks? Because according to the research that was done by Attila Flink, it is true. This language did exist. This common culture did exist. And the evidence for it is right there in the journals that exist in the Mitchell Library in Sydney, penned by the very people who were carrying out the crimes as they were carrying them out. And that's, again, something worth thinking about. And like I said, there's a lot more of this information. I've only brought you the tip of the iceberg. I'll see what I can do about uncovering a bit more to bring you on some future shows. But unfortunately, we have now reached that time again. Ladies and gentlemen, where it is the end of the show. And it's been good to be able to bring you this information today. And as I said, I've got a lot more of it to share. I've got so much to process, and I've just given you the very tip of the iceberg with the show today. But this is a very, very significant find, this discovery of this Magyar root language that has resulted from an examination of the work of Attila Flynn. Unfortunately, Attila Flynn died before he could publish his work, but there is still hope that we will get access to the originals and that we will be able to get more of this information out to the public, because I think it is very, very needed information, but it is very suppressed information, and I cannot think of any other information which is more damaging to the current status quo than the discovery of this root language. And I almost wasn't going to bring you a show this week because, frankly, this road has been quite a tough one to tread lately, but the importance of this information caused me to change my mind, and I thought I'd just get it out to you because I think it needs to be heard by people. And as I said, that is really the tip of the iceberg, but I'm going to have to leave it there for now, unfortunately, because I have completely run out of time. So thank you to all those who continue to support the show. Thank you to those who send me so many kind emails. I've certainly received a plethora of them in the last few weeks, and thank you very much for that. Thank you to all my Patreon supporters. You are the only ones who keep this show going. You are the only ones who keep this research going. So I cannot express my thanks to you people enough. And thank you to all the people who continue to listen to the show. Thank you to all the subscribers. It's nice to see my YouTube channel has actually reached 100,000 subscribers this week, and that's a great thing to see. So thank you all for that. That is it for me, folks. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.